battle that problem every single day. But one thing I don't do, I don't drive my car when I'm drinking. I get someone to drive me. Do not drink and drive. It's the stupidest thing. If you drink, just don't drive. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, you may hurt some other person, and you wouldn't want that on your conscience, would you?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
It's John Strong from MLS on NBC. You're listening to the greatest college radio station in the world, KWVA 88.1 FM.
Would it be crazy if you just stopped everything, packed your bags and left for a week, a month, a year? What if you left for 2 years? Would people think you'd lost your mind? What if you were going far away to help in a village on the edge of the Gobi Desert? A village crowded with Buddhist temples, not skyscrapers. A place where there isn't a word for recluse, but 1,000 words for community. Would it be crazy to go 5,000 miles from home? To spend time with people the rest of the world only reads about? To build libraries and fill them with stories? Prepare a meal with food you helped grow? To teach children and learn a thing or two about yourself? Would that be crazy? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
It's time for high school basketball on KWVA.
Behind the back...
You're listening to KWVA Eugene. It's time for Anarchy Radio right now. This is going to be a little introduction.
And Anarchy Radio is back on this January 6th. And Alice is doing fine after her hip surgery last week. Thank you. All is well. We've got some news, some action news, some of the latest technological insanity in society, and your calls at 541-346-0645. I think 2 weeks ago, there were three calls, I think. Well, I was going to play Happy by Pharrell Williams as a little Valentine to some of the cynical postmodern folks and the surrenderists out there, but we couldn't. It's banned. It's banned, yeah. It's just too racy, too radical.
Too suggestive.
Yes. Yeah, that's... So we march on. We had some Richard Twardzik, and we have a little more jazz piano. It was the break nears. Something I noticed just about an hour or two ago at Anarchist News. This is a funny introduction to the next little thing I wanted to bring up. There was a review in Fifth Estate 5 years ago of my Twilight of the Machines book, a slim volume, and by a guy, Spencer Sunshine, and I'm not going to comment because I'm not so sure which person that is. He's no longer with Fifth Estate. Anyway, he said, Zerzan is in no way a fascist. I know he's not. And then he goes on to say in this review that sometimes I've quoted people like Spengler and Heidegger, one of whom was a Nazi and the other one was fairly close, as if, and I just thought, what a curious thing. I mean, that's that is really kind of unenlightened. If you can't quote anyone who doesn't agree with you. I just thought it was kind of odd. And it, with the implication of being, well, he must be maybe sort of kind of a fascist, even though I'm telling you he's not, wink, wink. And this was kind of bashed in short order by one or two others on the topic. I mean, dumb as it was. Anyway, I'm thinking that maybe they dug this up because they're also about to put up at A News, and I could be quite wrong about this, a piece in an academic journal called the Athens Journal of Humanities and Arts, and this is Athens, Greece, not Athens, Ohio, by Lisa Burnett, who's a music prof at Stanford, I think. Anyway, the piece is called Savage Gardens, Original Sins, an anarcho-primitivist reading of Wagner's Parsifal. And the way I'm linking it together is, of course, everybody knows that Wagner was a real nasty, vicious anti-Semite. There wasn't any fascism 100 years ago, well, about 150 years ago, actually, when he wrote Parsifal, his last opera. Anyway, Burnett's point is that it really makes sense to see Parsifal in a primitivist light. In other words, the villainous Klingsor is an agriculturalist, in effect, you know, in a sort of mythical sense. And the good guys, these virtuous Grail knights, leave the land, leave the farming, and go into the wilderness, and they are just provided for somehow. I mean, it's somewhat ethereal, but she's grounding it in a literal sense, that this is kind of the battle between domesticators and those who didn't want to domesticate or be domesticated. And it's a fairly interesting piece. She says, because for one thing, she says, for example, though it has grabbed headlines in recent years, anarcho-primitivism can in fact trace its history way, way back and so forth. Grabbed headlines in recent years? I wasn't aware of that. Anyway, here, let me just read a little bit more of this, because I think the piece is somewhat interesting in its own right, as well as maybe signifying a little more interest afield in the critique, which is anarcho-primitivism. Part of it reads, for a position that is initially striking, if not shocking, in its radicality, anarcho-primitivism has been able to marshal a fair amount of evidence in its favor. The raising of crops and livestock led humans to form permanent settlements with the accumulation of material possessions, perhaps the initial catalyst for today's consumerist society. Settled villages with material accoutrements could lead to crowding and its concomitant evils of crime and communicable diseases. Contagion, however, is not the only consequence of the switch from foraging to cultivation. Examination of ancient skeletons has revealed that agricultural peoples, at least initially, were shorter, weaker boned, more likely to be malnourished, more often suffered from maladies such as celiac disease and dental cavities than their forager cousins. The shift to an agricultural way of life introduced the concept of land ownership to humanity, unbalanced distribution of societal, leading to unequal power relationships between landlords and tenants and an unbalanced distribution of societal resources, the first division of humanity into haves and have-nots. Finally, abandoning foraging in favor of food production undeniably produced a population boom, often estimated on the order of tenfold or more, which led to environmental degradation and the loss of native wildlife habitats and so forth. So she's got a good general fix on the main lines of what is talking about in these terms of what the primitivist thing focuses on. But here's the thing that's not so great, and I bring it up because it's just a very common type of comment. Kind of in the middle of her piece, she says, it's not necessarily agriculture or domestication per se that's bad, but the will to dominate. In other words, it's the mindset that's the real villain. It's not the institution. And that's so often the escape route. In other words, you don't really expect to go against agriculture or domestication because, after all, you have a more idealist point of view. In other words, it's just the mentality. It's how you look at things, right? It's, you hear this on and on, time after time, with people who contribute a lot in terms of understanding what did happen and what the nature of domestication is and so forth. But you might as well say, well, the Holocaust wasn't bad per se. It's that, it's the thought or something. I mean, it becomes kind of silly when you think about it. It either it is or it isn't. You know, it's not just a mental concept. It's when it becomes a reality. And then the question is, well, does that mean you're going to do something about it or not? And that applies to Heidegger, by the way, speaking of my earlier reference there. That, to me, is the fundamental dodge in Heidegger. I mean, he contributes in an enormous way to understanding the nature of technology and its grasping appetite, how everything becomes just, as he called it, standing reserve. Everything in existence is fed into the machine just as part of technology, and he also says that's why it's really the end of thinking. I mean, it just swallows everything. You've got nothing left. But then he comes along later to say, but it isn't really the technology per se, and she's kind of echoing that, I'd say, consciously or otherwise. You know, it's more the enframing or the he's got his own little vocabulary, but it isn't really the technology itself. And so then he's not a Luddite. He escapes, he gets away from the actual consequence of what he's pointing out. And one could also say, bring in David Abram along these lines, Spell of the Sensuous, very important book about the rise of alphabetic literacy and the whole separation from the earth. A lot of good stuff. And kind of the same point. At the end of the book, he says, oh, but don't get me wrong. I don't think we need to get rid of any of this. That would be crazy. This is just over and over the same kind of routine. And maybe I'm just being paranoid here, but maybe if Anarchist News posts that, the real point will be, well, people like Zerzan are in love with Wagner, who is one of the most awful people you could think of. The guilt by association thing. So to make that out of the opera Parsifal, to show the sympathy, is really suspect and kind of, I suppose, proto-fascist but we will see. And whether or not, whether they do it or not, this is the kind of lurking stuff that one finds, and the concomitant evasion of the thing by people. And one more thing on that, David Abram, this is a quote I saw recently, and I don't know where it's from, but it's David Abram. He wrote, "The wind was taken out of the sails of the radical ecology movement precisely at the moment computers moved into people's homes and the digital revolution became this much more personalized and a collective thing invading our homes, our pockets, our telephones, and everybody fell into this deep thrall with their screens and began to live much more in this house of mirrors that isolates us and sort of closes us into a loop with our own signs and short circuits the old reciprocity between the human body and the animate earth." Lovely. But again, you get to the end of the Spell of Sensuous book, and I doubt that he's changed. But that doesn't mean that doesn't mean you should take this seriously and then therefore dump all this online, this whole movement toward becoming 100% technological. Oh, no, I don't mean that. So it's a bit of a giant joke to me. Okay, let's go through some of the weekly news, just in the usual random fashion. The big story last week was the AirAsia jet, and not the first time. This has happened in South Asia in the past year. Of course, the jet carrying 162 people, and they have found, of course, in the past few days that it did crash, and they're recovering the bodies. This happened, it happened 9 days ago. It happened on Sunday, the 28th. And part of this, well, there's various points to this, but one is the fact that the heavy monsoon rains hit, and they were the worst in many years. There's a factor of global warming, one might conclude. And the other thing, maybe even more directly to the point, I'm not sure here, but there's some reference to the computerized autopilot function in these modern jetliners. They're more and more flown by automatic pilot, and that's a computerized program. They take off and they land the planes somewhat manually, but the rest of the time they could be asleep. And so once again, the de-skilling, the reduction of skills, so that when something unpleasant is happening, some crisis hits, they are less and less equipped to know how to deal with it. It's rather plain. And we don't know exactly what happened on this flight, but it's no wonder that people have a little bit brought this up, the general tendency in this field as well as others, that people no longer know how to do things. Well, in light of the Iraq and Afghanistan fiascos by the U.S. military, of course, there's a piece in the a fairly recent New York Times piece, "In a Sorrowful Pastime, Kabul Residents watch as drug addiction climbs in the capital of Afghanistan, surging numbers of heroin addicts." Quite a big story with photos. Another part of this, I'm not saying there were no heroin addicts before the 12-year-old war, but it's considerably more now. Well, more reports, more studies. Arctic and its future looking dimmer every year, says a new federal report about 10 days ago. 2014 is in the record books as the warmest ever in recorded history. Deforestation, big long piece back on the 24th in the New York Times. "Deforesting the world. Since the dawn of civilization, humans have destroyed or badly damaged perhaps three-quarters of the world's forests." Yeah, that's kind of the main punchline there. And Gabriel Popkin, op-ed piece on the 26th, also the New York Times, "Cities as Havens for Trees." And this is really a big irony here, I would say. We're talking about infestations, these invasive blights that are wiping out all kinds of species of trees. The latest, this is makes special reference to America's hemlocks, wild hemlocks, and the title, Cities as Havens for Trees. What is happening is cities of all places, having nothing to do with any ecosystem, of course, are by that reason, as these ecosystems are punished in various ways toward collapse, they are havens for trees, small numbers of trees, of course. You don't have giant boreal forests in any urban space, obviously, a tiny fraction of it at best. So we've got all these blights happening. And cities and parks, they do have, they are some respite. Popkin writes, unfortunately, cities will never give the hemlock an ecologically meaningful life in nature. Hemlocks support a complex and unique ecosystem that has evolved around them, kind of the opposite of a city. So these trees may pretty much disappear, except if you buy one from a nursery. That's really kind of, they're becoming extinct. In fact, like the ginkgo is virtually extinct in the wild, but you can go to the nursery and buy one, you know, and have it in this unnatural space where it'll thrive for a while until too much contamination takes it down. Well, lots of stuff toward the end of 2014 about mass society. This horrible stampede in Shanghai killed 35 or more. New Year's Eve thing, celebration. And, you know, you got all these car smash-ups, these Italian ferries, many dead there. I mean, just they're just classic cases of mass society. And the dangers, the sad results. It's not getting better. Yeah, the celebration turned into a stampede, the panic thing. Here's another one, a grisly one. South Africa, Robin Dixon, writing in the LA Times, January 2nd, from Johannesburg, talking about the beach at Cape Town and how many people leave their kids there. Kind of amazing. Some 200,000 people in the first day of 2015 head to the beach. City's golden sands. They got 1,100 cops there. And by day's end, around 500 kids had been lost, some as young as 3. Some 70 hadn't been collected by the end of New Year's Day, although that to some the figure is quite a bit higher than 70, where they take them to the police station. This is shocking. The media there in South Africa finds it shocking. I am battling to understand, how do you lose a child on a beach and you still go home? The ties are just loosening like crazy in this stage of civilization. Well, you've got more. We're talking about the star. On the West Coast, the Oregon coast in particular. Seabirds now. This is a bird called Cassin's auklet. I've never even heard the name. But along with the starfish rotting away, there's a mass die-off, and it's quite puzzling. This was an AP story Sunday the 4th. There are deaths in winter, you know, from various things, especially in the cold winter, but this is quite unusual, unprecedented, and just add that to the... So listen, the avian flu, that's been found in poultry in southern Oregon and in China, getting back to China, slaughtering thousands of chickens. This is mainland China. They've closed markets and banned imports from other countries, imports of live poultry, more bird flu. more infectious disease. And right now in this country, flu and pneumonia deaths are at epidemic levels, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. All this technology can't cure the common cold or the flu and this kind of thing. Influenza activity widespread in 36 states during week 51, the second half of December there. And the number of officers killed by firearms up 56%. And there have been two shootings in New York City of cops, one Monday night. Let's see, one was Sunday night and one was last night, that is. I think they were both in the Bronx, or one was in Brooklyn. Anyway, yeah, endangered species, the New York Pig Department, as they profess their outrage that anyone would criticize them in the slightest way. And in Los Angeles, this was Monday, December the 29th, two opened fire on a police patrol car in L.A. They didn't shoot anyone, though. They didn't hit anyone. And whether or not this is a rising tide of hatred of the cops, I don't know. It sort of looks like it. And meanwhile, we got the everyday slaughter. Sunday the 28th, four dead in a Texas home near Crowley, North Texas. Tuesday the 30th, mass murder and suicide leave nine dead in Edmonton, Alberta. That's kind of rare for Canada. They don't have nearly the gun violence or these mass shooting outbreaks that we do. But there was nine at three different locations. Somebody killed a number of people and killed himself. Family affair. Well, I could extend that list, but why do that? And a little bit of late 2014 recall news. This kills me. This was the biggest recall in history by a wide margin. 60 million vehicles. The number of, it's certainly a record in the auto industry in this country. And to get in under the wire, the latest one was 67,000 pickup trucks recalled by Chrysler. They were trying to boost the numbers there. It's another daily news thing. And another thing about 2014, more proof that the rich are getting richer while everyone else gets poorer. The wealth gap is the largest on record. We've heard that before. The gulf widens. And the story back in December about plastics, 270,000 tons of plastics in the Earth's oceans, 5 trillion pieces, according to the journal PLOS-1. That's been in the news somewhat. And a little bit of one particular, or should I say particulate, pollution or contamination news. National study, this is from Environmental Health News, links cadmium exposure to premature aging of cells, even at concentrations well below current safety standards. This is a George Washington University study. Cadmium, fairly common industrial thing, batteries, coatings for iron and steel, etc. It is kind of a function of industrialism, it seems. Yeah, this premature aging triggers a number of diseases of all kinds, some of the worst chronic diseases. And one last one in the general news category before we take a break, not forgetting for you to call us at 541-346-0645. Story from Fort Berthold Indian Reservation in North Dakota. New York Times, Monday, the 29th of December, where oil corruption and bodies surface scandal emerges. Yeah, this is a res in North Dakota. part of the story is 850 oil-related environmental incidents in Fort Berthold reported by companies. It could be higher, from 2007 through mid-October 2014. And this is about the collusion and violence of the tribal government, their collusion with the oil industry. I remember Ward Churchill saying, it's okay to hate Indians, and then he quickly pointed out he meant the tribal governments that are armed and paid for by the federal government to keep the lid on things on reservations, by and large. So quite an ugly story. And people resisting. People there are not just swallowing it, but pretty mad about it. Well, we got some more Richard Twardzik, I do believe. Albuquerque Social Club. Crutch for the Crab by Richard Twardzik. The opening tune was his Albuquerque Social Club. Kind of, I reversed the order. Trying to throw Carl off. Yeah, well, we got some action news. Let's do that. Well, okay, I got something here that isn't action really exactly. It's kind of a, it's something of a negative. This is, there was a statement issued on the 21st anniversary of the Zapatistas' uprising of January 1st, 1994, and it has reference to the students of Ayotzinapa who were kidnapped and killed in Guerrero State, Mexico. And I'm going to read just a little tiny bit of it here, see what you get from this. They're sort of long-winded, these statements. Anyway, this... not that long, but I'm going to read just a tiny part. We Zapatistas believe that trust must no longer be placed in the bad governments that exist all over the world. These bad governments only serve the big capitalists. These bad governments are merely the employees of capital. They are the managers, foremen, and overseers of the great capitalist plantation. These bad governments will never do a single good thing for the people. Anything that they might say to the contrary is irrelevant, because these governments aren't the ones in charge. The only boss is neoliberal capitalism. And throughout the this statement, this communique, there's nothing else that's at issue. It's only neoliberal capitalism. So I guess that would let Evo Morales in Bolivia off the hook. He's a socialist. And yet his policies are against the environment and against indigenous people. So this is a very narrow slant, I would say, and it's more Marxist than ever from the EZLN. I wonder if, it's not for me to say, but I wonder if there's even a shred of indigeneity here. And it's signed, it's, you know, for years now, this is no newsflash here, signed for the Indigenous Revolutionary Clandestine Community General Command of the Zapatista Army for National Liberation. Wow, that's some bureaucratic mouthful, I would say. And it's funny, you know, once again, big silence. All the uproarious fans of the EZLN, they haven't said much in recent years. And one knows why with this turn. And I'm just hoping people don't just go to sleep, ignore it, and then fall for the next deal that ends up this way, right? Come on. You got nothing to say about it? Did you learn anything from this development? Are you down with it? What do you make of it? It's kind of like, yeah, it's the big sense. Anyway, onward to better things. And this was announced last Saturday, the 2nd, but it happened on November 24th. Molotovs thrown at homicide division of the Santiago police in Chile. A detective's car was burnt after the attackers locked the pigs in their compound with chains and padlocks. Yes. December 13th, major damage in northern Italy. A telecom center got attacked in Rovereto. Cameras were moved away, very politely, I'm sure, and incendiary devices were placed in several spots. Telephone companies, besides causing environmental devastation, are on the side of the state in guaranteeing control and security. In solidarity with some Italian anarchist prisoners as well. A hearty blow there. And since the 1st of December, there have been 6 fires set along Italy's high-speed rail line. This is the TAV up in the northwest corner, the Susa Valley of Italy, and they have brought fast-moving trains to a halt. One of the major one was, this was a set of fires actually in Bologna. There were 3 fires set there, put the entire rail network in northern Italy on hold until it could be repaired. At Bologna's Santa Viola station. That battle isn't over yet. December 22nd, the Spanish consulate in Amsterdam was hit with paint bombs. The front door was damaged in solidarity with victims of state repression. And some ALF news here. In Haifa, Israel, the windows were smashed at a McDonald's on the night of the 19th and 20th of December. And pro-hunting pubs and hotels in Ireland have been targeted. This is throughout the past month or so. Damage to these pubs and hotels that host hunt meets. And on the night of December 2nd, in Oberon, New South Wales, Australia, there was an ALF arson attack on a slaughterhouse. Severe fire damage. The photos show that. And for the 3rd time in about a year, a fur farm in Italy near Ravenna Italy was attacked, or was liberated, one might say, 800 mink released, and again the third time in the year. And Istanbul, this is December 29th, or it was posted December 29th, truck used to transport chickens to slaughter had its windows broken and its tires slashed. And in Germany, this is just a little sampling here, in Braunschweig, Germany, second time in 2 months, a fur shop was visited, all windows and doors broken at this fur store, backing up their initial message, shall we say. January 1st in Denmark, cameras and wires broken, all minks at a fur farm, and I don't know where in Denmark, but somewhere. They were either freed or they were dyed with a non-toxic hair dye to render them useless for sale. That won't make a mink coat, as this kind of dyes. There's some ALF news. And on New Year's Eve, 940 cars were set on fire during celebrations in Paris. That's
it's a lot of cars.
That's a lot of cars. Yeah, that's a lot of cars. yeah, this is something of a tradition there. Various New Year's Eve noise demos in solidarity with prisoners from Hamilton, Ontario, to Jackson, Mississippi, Santa Cruz. In fact, in Santa Cruz, anti-cop forces smashed up county jail vehicles. And according to the LA Times, I don't have any first-person deal on this, but in Oakland, New Year's Eve, about 130 people threw bottles and rocks at the cops downtown Oakland. And a Deutsche Bank in Leipzig, in southeast Germany, was wrecked in solidarity with anarchist prisoners in Spain. Windows broken, ATMs destroyed. And let's see, in Turkey, what was started by three people has grown to over 2,000 on Turkey's south coast. Karetta Beach is a major turtle nesting ground, now threatened by a corporate development, some kind of entertainment destination of some kind. So many have been gathering to block the devastation, and that's ongoing. Here's a little desertion news. When I was a grad student at USC, and I was on the outs, it was nearing the end of my career there, and they assigned me to be a teaching assistant for a ROTC class, military history class, and so I, groaning, would go and sit in the back. And but actually, I found it to be a rather fascinating class. It really was history. It wasn't just war-like propaganda. I was amazed, for one thing, by the figures on how many people deserted in American wars over the centuries, and how unpopular every war was except for World War II, which involved attacks. You know, there was support for that. But the other ones were not. The other dozen or something wars, I don't know how many offhand, something like that, at least 10 or 12. Anyway, this was in the... This was an AP story on Christmas Day. The Army has prosecuted about 1,900 cases of desertion since 2001, despite tens of thousands of soldiers fleeing the service in the face of combat, long and multiple deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan, strains on families, etc. More than 20,000 soldiers have been dropped from the rolls as deserters since 2006. So they kind of like, we don't want to talk about that. They really don't go after them very much. They talk about more serious cases if there's some danger involved, if they deserted troops in some situation or something, then apparently they would go after them. But yeah, that's what I remember. You don't hear about it too much, but there it is. And last but not least, or I don't know, last or least or whatever, a couple of new, I don't want to call them unibomberists because some people explicitly say they're not, but action groups, not direct action in the usual treacly sense of the word, but now we know about Mexico. A couple of groups have announced themselves as operating somewhat even lethally in Mexico. The individual is tending toward the wild. ITS is the Spanish acronym. Been around a while. Now, in Chile, there's the wild/terrorist behavior group. We will attack everything that represents the techno-industrial system. We are uncivilized criminals. We are here, and we are sufficiently radicalized not to give a step back. And this is a line that I see when this was posted. There was a commentary from a leftist. We are against the techno-industrial system, not the state, not capitalism, not the bourgeoisie. We will consciously attack everything and everyone who seems to us to support the system without pity. We are not anarchists, et cetera, et cetera. So somebody, I think in Anarchist News, said, oh, hooray, I'm glad they're not anarchists. They've said they're not anarchists. They don't care about capitalism. You know, this kind of usage, it's implied, it seems to me, capitalism. If you were against civilization, you're certainly against capitalism. That's just part of it. That's just not the deepest part either. But, you know, I kind of wonder, I think they're trying to, obviously they're trying to separate themselves from the left. But I don't know, it seems like kind of a clumsy way to do it. So you're in favor of capitalism then, or what? You don't... They want to make a point. They want to make it clear that they're violent Luddites and I think anti-civilization. But, you know, that isn't totally clear either. But this is the appearance of one more group, another anti-tech, possibly anti-civilization group. And they're stating that that's what they're going to do. They're going to go for it. And in Argentina... And I believe this is quite new. This was the original statement came out November 1st, I think. Conductas incivilizados. Incivilizados. I can't even read it. Anyway, uncivilized conduct, obviously. They point out that technology equals death. And their way of cutting themselves off from other labels. We are not anarchists, primitivists, or unibomberists. So it's a little puzzling, but, you know, they don't want to be confused with some of these sort of anarcho-lefties or people like that who, in kind of Ted Kaczynski fashion, you know, he's hell on wheels about that. Everybody's a leftist except him kind of thing, you know, and even where it's absurd to say that. So that's... kind of wild. We are seeing more of this. What it really represents, it's hard to say. You know, they're not providing their numbers or their targets necessarily. So, yeah. 541-346-0645. Hasten to the telephone. We're waiting. Carl is drumming his fingers. Well, cover of Time magazine a week or two ago, a picture of Mark Zuckerberg. This is the front page. This is the cover. It reads, "Half the world is not enough. Mark Zuckerberg's plan to get every human online." Yeah, he's the person of the year. Time's person of the year, yeah. I didn't know that till today. And I'm going to insert this here.
So was Hitler.
So was Hitler. There you go. Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg better watch what he gets in the mail from some of these people. Anyway, Black and Green Review is not quite complete. It's the writing is complete, I understand, but the layout and the printing is going to take a little while. Check it out. Issue number one, early spring. And I think this is for real, and that's going to be exciting. That's going to really... That is really needed. What Black Seed didn't really come through with, in my opinion, I've seen some of the work in this issue, and it's dynamite. It's just really, really powerful. They've got a great team, Kevin Tucker and friends. Well, The Independent, the London paper for today, writes about the age of social media. Could you give it up? More of us are using it more than ever, but is it good for us? Well, Dr. Eric Sigman, whose specialty is screen time and children, writes about Facebook depression. I'll just leave it at that. We all know about that. And there's more on the selfies on a stick, so you can take more selfies. The selfie thing is way out of line. Yesterday's New York Times piece by David Carr, he talks about the vast automated networks to harvest all that narcissism. And the selfies on a stick, some people call them narcissistics. That's pretty clever. That's great. There they are with their narcissistics. Yeah, New Year's Eve. The tendency to listen to the holy music of the self is reflected in the abundance of all these Vine, WhatsApp, Snapchat, Instagram, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he's kind of casting aspersions. Hacking Our Community by Frank Bruni recently. Hacking, you know, I'll just delete that. He says, secrecy, spontaneity, how very quaint. This is just a quaint relic. There, we know there's no privacy. What's a little bit, what he uncovers a little bit more is how people do police themselves. There's a kind of self, there's a chilling effect on thinking and research for some people because they know they're being watched and listened to, read online. Overwhelming majorities of Americans seriously question the confidentiality and security of their social media activity, their online chats, their texts, and yet pressed on with all of these. It's a bit of a bind. Yes. And here's an ad of the week from SAP. I'm sure that stood for something, but the corporate logos or names are now just being abbreviated.
Standard and Poor's?
That might be it. You got me. Now it's just SAP. What a SAP, right? And here's a two-page... It's a two-page, full-pages ad with very little text. Complexity is 50% legacy, 50% interim, and 50% duct tape. And they show this wiring that's all bollocked up and stuck together. And then the second page says, simple, just works. And so, isn't that the most highly developed technology is now being sold, as if anyone would buy this, as simplicity. It's not complexity. Oh, no. And somehow it's the opposite of complexity. It's just, they just pile on the more outrageous, goofy things. Well, I would say the movie of the year was definitely Snowpiercer, fiercely anti-civilization movie. You can't take civilization over. If you run it, you're part of it. And so that's the amazing lesson of Snowpiercer.
I've been looking all over the place for that. It's a graphic novel.
Yeah, it started as a Korean graphic novel, I think.
Yeah, and I've been looking all over for it. I can't find it.
Wow, that's too bad.
I think it's been re-released. Probably in conjunction with the movie, but
so now it's too new to get, you mean?
I just haven't seen it in any of the places I've gone. I could probably order it online, but
boy, it's powerful, I think.
It looks really good.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. It just blew me away. And here's another one. Well, this is a TV series from Britain called Black Mirror.
Oh, that one's a good one.
Oh, you know about that? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've only seen the first three. Apparently there's three more that I haven't seen, three or four more.
Is it really blasting the digital future kind of thing?
It has a lot to do with the mediation of experience.
Ah,
I thought there's a screen. There's a lot of screens.
I see.
Yeah,
wow.
It's pretty interesting. The first one especially was my favorite one. It had to do with the Prime Minister of England being enticed into performing a lewd act.
Oh,
with a pig.
Oh yeah, bestiality. He's forced
to do
it.
On live TV.
Oh, amazing! Wow, Dark City, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Starring John Hamm of Mad Men. I guess, huh? He doesn't look like the madman.
I must be in the ones I haven't seen.
He's probably not in all of them, huh?
No.
Nope.
So it's one of those things where there's a different cast, a different story every show.
Oh, so it is a little bit like
it's like Twilight Zone or
Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Huh, in the format.
Like yeah.
Sounds good. How to Speak Internet writes Pamela Paul, Cultural Studies, how all of the definitions of things are kind of inverted. Some of it's real obvious. To have something liked online is not as great as having something actually liked. That's a mild version, I guess. And in the style section of a recent Sunday New York Times, I thought this is a giveaway right there. Millennials get a cyber voice. Style is right. Is anything really happening? People feel empowered. They imagine that somebody's hearing their voice. Well, some people do. You can create your own identity via Tumblr. Social media has to do with people thinking that's all you have to do. So that's why it's fixed into the style section, I get. And here's another, this is a more down-to-earth one here. We're running out of time. In Germany, apparently, there's quite a blowback. They've been pretty green energy oriented. If you've been there, they're almost religious about it. Or maybe they're more than religious about it. But they're starting to see how it works. And this has to do with a high voltage direct current line from some of this green energy, like windmills and solar panels. In the case of the windmills, you've got to get the energy to people, you know, or industry or whatever, right? So they have these, they're proposing half-mile-wide transmission line routes, and people don't dig it. They don't want the magnetic fields. They're worried about that. It's ugly. It reduces the value of their house, that sort of thing. 200-foot-tall transmission towers. Yeah, we didn't think of that. It just seemed like a wise, sustainable idea to have windmills. Well, it's an industrial system, isn't it? You've got to have a way to move that around, and that's how you do that. It's quite amazing. Well, I got more of that, but we'll have to shelve that. Next week, Catherine will be here. That'll be terrific. And we're going to go out with some...
Leonard Cohen.
Now in Vienna, there's 10 pretty women. There's a shoulder where death comes to cry. There's a lobby with 900 windows. There's a tree where the doves go to die. There's a piece that was torn from the morning, and it hangs in the gallery of frost. Aye, 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 aye. Take this waltz, take this waltz, take this waltz with the clamp on its jaw.